Welcome to the Ted Brewer Show. This is Ted Brewer, your host today with my co-host, Austin Brewer. We're a father and son team that basically tell you the latest things and the latest trends as far as nutrition and health and the latest news. We do the best we possibly can, and so I kind of enjoy doing it with Austin. We've been having a blast doing it, and thank you so much for the positive feedback. Again, I want to thank my guest yesterday, John Rappaport, for being on with me. He did a phenomenal job. I mean, absolutely incredible show. If you guys missed it on the Zika virus, you've got to listen to yesterday's show. I'm not even going to talk about the Zika virus anymore. If you guys want to know what about the Zika virus and what it really is, go back to yesterday's archive, listen to it. John talked about that. He talked about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. He talked about so much stuff, didn't he, Austin?
Oh, yeah. He went into awesome detail. I actually learned a lot about it, too, especially with the Zika virus. And I had no idea that there were 25,000 cases a year in the United States on a yearly basis with the Zika virus and mosquitoes that usually go unaffected. Most people may get sick, a little issue may happen, they have to take some meds, and it's usually gone. That's it. This whole thing they're doing right now, it's either blown way out of proportion or it's a full-blown bioform of Zika that they've released in GMO mosquitoes now that they're intentionally trying to infect everybody. But I think it's more just obfuscation from what I've read with the TPP the last couple of days.
I think so, too. Okay, let me do my Bible verse right quick. This is out of Proverbs chapter 12 and chapters 15. Let me read a couple of them in each. Whoever loves discipline loves knowledge, but he who hates correction is stupid. A good man obtains favor from the Lord, but the crafty condemns, but the Lord condemns a crafty man. A man cannot be established through wickedness, but the righteous cannot be uprooted. A wife of noble character is her husband's crown, but a disgraceful wife is like a decay in his bones. Chapter 15, verse 1. A gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. And let me just segue here for a second. I've learned a long, long time ago, Austin, when you have a gentle answer with people, most of the time you can calm people down. You start yelling back, all you do is getting in a fight, big old argument. Verse 2, the tongue of the wise commends knowledge, but the mouth of the fool gushes folly. The eyes of the Lord are everywhere, keeping watch on the wicked and the good. The tongue that brings healing is a tree of life, but a deceitful tongue crushes the spirit. And finally, a fool spurns his father's discipline, but whoever heeds correction shows prudence. The reason I want to cover these verses today is this. We're talking a lot about attitude, about the tongue, about wisdom, going into detail about who loves discipline, loves knowledge. You know, guys, I'm not right all of the time, but when it comes to the health and nutrition stuff, I got a pretty good dialed in on that deal. I mean, I pretty much know that stuff. And so when I give you advice, you know, like don't drink fluoride, don't leak chlorine, don't drink bromine, don't put it in your body, we've dialed it in for a long, long time. My first story today, by the way, is this. And I told, it was so funny because Wayne Allen Root is going to be my guest next Wednesday on the show. Wayne Allen Root is an internationally known best-selling author. He lives in Las Vegas. He's born-again Christian. He was a he's a Messianic Jew, born-again Christian who was born Jewish. Great guy. I talked to him on the phone yesterday. Oh, God, wonderful man. Talked to him for about 45 minutes. He's excited about doing the show with us next Wednesday, one of Donald Trump's best friends. So if you have any questions that you want me to ask Wayne Allen Root for next Wednesday, email them to me and I'll make sure I ask them if they're appropriate. Now, if you want to be fussing at him or whatever, I'm not going to do that. But if you have a legitimate question you want to ask him. But one of the things that I warned him about the other day, I said, Wayne, Donald has to put security around his plane. He has to have people, armed guards around that aircraft when it's on the ground. No other ground crews can touch that aircraft without Donald's approval, and he has to have his own ground crew. He has to put them on the plane with him. The ground crew, the service crew, all those guys need to be with him, so even when they're filling it up with fuel, he knows the plane's there. Whether he's in the plane or not in the plane, that plane has to be guarded. Yesterday, Austin, Trump's plane had to make an emergency landing. Is that nuts or what?
Wow, that's not a surprise, though, honestly.
Nope. No, it's not, because, I mean, Donald Trump's plane was forced to make an emergency landing at the Nashville International Airport on Wednesday. The Republican presidential candidate's Boeing 757 was flying from Iowa to Arkansas when the aircraft experienced engine problems. Surprise, surprise, surprise. Guys, I'm telling you, We've got another guest coming on tomorrow who was actually friends with Hillary Clinton back in the 60s. They were Goldwater girls together when Hillary was still a Republican. And she's going to go into detail on the dirty tricks. The guest tomorrow will only be about 20 minutes. But she's going to go into, her name's Kelly. I forgot her last name. Great lady. She wrote an article this week on News with Views. You guys should be at the beginning of the show tomorrow. But what's interesting about it is she's going to go into detail about what Hillary does, what the Republicans have done, what the Democrats have done, and why they get away with this constant campaign lying and laws that were passed back in the 60s to allow it to happen, Austin. I didn't know they actually passed laws allowing this. And so she's going to be our guest tomorrow. But I'm telling you, and I'm going to say this again out loud right now, Donald Trump needs to not let anybody else touch that plane. I mean, when they're filling it up with fuel, son, his staff needs to be watching every single thing they do to that airplane. They don't need to touch it. Yesterday, he was forced out of Nashville because of engine problems. Guys, a lot of people get killed on airplanes, especially these private planes, and a lot of people have been murdered on airplanes because that's one of the quickest ways to start messing with their aircraft. And when you're at 40,000 feet, you don't have a big window as far as getting things right. What's your next story, Oz?
Yeah, well, you're spot on with that because I didn't really think of it from that aspect. But, I mean, if they really don't agree with the Donald, the globalists really don't want him running, which I'm pretty certain they don't want him involved in anything anymore, this presidential campaign, that is the easiest way to make everything go away. Blame it on an engine failure and it just all just disappears. They don't have to worry.
Then Donald's no longer a problem for anybody, for the GOP.
Yeah, so he definitely needs to keep an eye out on that. And it's interesting, because I brought up a minute ago that the whole Zika virus, it seems like every time there's always something going in the back shadows, there's always some worst in front of us that we have to look at. And one of those Zika virus that John Rappaport went into detail on yesterday, and it's interesting, today, about an hour ago, a couple hours ago, the U.S. and 11 other countries on either side of the Pacific signed one of the biggest trade deals in history. They signed it today, and now Obama is urging Republicans and Democrats that they need to approve it this year. They don't need to read it. They don't need to worry about it. They just need to approve it, and then they can read through it after they approve it. And this is unreal. It's the exact same thing that we called out last year. They don't want anybody to know what's in this trade agreement. And what it does, essentially, from the notes that I have read, is it essentially builds an entire global government again, and it's further and further and further bringing us into that global new world order, and that's what this whole thing's about. And the TPP is not something that needs to be approved at all. I hope Congress doesn't do it, but we'll see what happens with it.
Well, you're absolutely right, Austin. And what's about the TPP, Donald Trump straight called it out on the campaign trail, said it was bad for the United States. And, you know, this is what we're doing. We have the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement. We've got the South American Trade Agreement. We've got, you know, NAFTA. All of these different trade agreements, all they do is create, like Ross Perot said back in the 90s, a giant sucking sound of all the jobs leaving the United States. And now we have a bunch of dead-end jobs in the United States where people can't really make good money anymore, and they're not being blessed because they simply don't have the ability to get a good high-paying job making $25, $30, $40 an hour. They don't have that ability anymore, $50 an hour, some of these jobs. And so they don't have that. And so they're slowly destroying the middle class in the United States and the upper middle class because they don't want them here. They don't want somebody to be upwardly mobile in the United States. They want everybody to be a debt slave, and that's the whole thing. And friends, listen to me for a second. This is so, so very important to me that you've got to listen to me. I heard an old pastor one time, this is back in the 90s, he did a sermon one time on buying stuff, and he said something very succinctly. He says, never buy things you don't need with money that you don't have to impress people that you don't know. I'm going to repeat that. Never want something so bad that you want to buy it with money that you borrow to impress people that you don't know with money that you don't have. I mean, think about that for a second. How many people do that? They get themselves deeper and deeper and deeper into debt. I know, Austin, you know, you've got a lot of your friends that have got themselves so strapped financially, it's causing marital problems because they're arguing with each other all the time because they can't pay the bills anymore. This is all designed to do this. This is what college loans are all about. I have another friend of mine who came over yesterday. His son was able to go through college without any kind of debt because his father paid the bill. It was over $100,000 in college expenses. It was out-of-state tuition, and now he can't get a job. He's had like four dead-end, meaningless jobs in the past year after he got out of college, and he can't hold the jobs down because the jobs don't pay anything. He can't even pay the bills, and his father was kind enough to buy him a vehicle for graduation, now all he's done is like run 35, 40,000 miles on this vehicle in less than a year, and he has no job. And sadly, this is what's happening all over the United States. And I'm going to give you this advice one more time, guys, and then we're going to get on to it. I got a whole bunch of news to cover. If you're going to go to college, get yourself an engineering degree, a nursing degree, a medical degree, engineering degree, a law degree, something that you can get licensed in, that you can have a job that you can be licensed with the state in, and you can charge a fee for your services. If you do that, you can actually pay back your college loans. But if you get degrees in sociology or communication or psychology or anything that's not marketable, once you get out, even business, all it does is gives you $100,000 in debt. And do what I did. My first 2 years of college, I worked part-time when I was going to the local college here in town. I was accepted at every major university in the state of Florida because my grades were so high and my placement exams. I didn't go. I chose to stay at the Polk State College here locally so I could live at home, save money for my first 2 years and get an AA degree. Not because I had to, because I wanted to, because I wanted to stay out of debt. But my father was also helping to pay for all this, and so was my mom at that point. And then my next 2 years, I went to Florida State, and in my final years of graduate school, I worked part-time. There's all kinds of ways you can make money as a student without having to borrow money and go into debt. The local state colleges, the local state universities, they give you really good tuition rates. Don't feel as though you have to send your child to an out-of-state college or out-of-state university and pay these ridiculously high tuition rates. It's simply not cost-effective in the long run unless they're going to get a professional degree. They'd be better go to a vo-tech program, learn how to be a mechanic, learn how to do AC repair, do all this kind of stuff, and perhaps start their own AC repair business and do things like that to generate more revenue and more income. But to go out and start off your life with $100,000 of student debt, now you're trying to buy a house, you got the student debt, now you got two car payments, now you got Obamacare that's gone up to 700% with some people that I know already. Now, what do? You have no extra money coming in, and you stay around broke all the time. You can't even buy food. It's an awful way to live, guys. Don't do that. It's not worth it. You got anything you want to add to that, Oz?
Yeah, I do. And one other thing that I want to say, that I've seen a few kids do this correctly and a few kids do it completely incorrectly, is if you do have to get a small student loan, get it as small as you absolutely have to. Try and get as many state grants, as many Bright Future scholarships, anything extra you can get on the side. There's a lot of stuff that's available, $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 a year and basic tuition grants from most states that will subsidize a lot of stuff. And if you have to get a student loan for $4,000 or $5,000 a year, this and that, that's palatable. You can manage that. You get out of college with, you know, $10,000 or $15,000 in student loans, you can probably knock those out pretty quick. But what these guys like to do is they give you a blank check and they say, okay, we'll cover your housing, we'll cover your food expense, we'll cover your tuition, we'll cover your books that are $300 a piece, and we'll give you extra money on the side to spend, you know, for any other thing that you need while you're in college. And that's exactly what happens. Even these state schools that are only, you know, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 for a bachelor's degree, I've seen kids come out of those with $60,000 and $70,000 in student loans, and the degree didn't even cost almost half of that. So in the books, order your books online, guys, or rent your books or buy them used off Amazon. Don't pay these egregious prices that the bookstores like to charge for these new books, $200, $300, $400 a book sometimes. Complete and total waste of money. Figure out, talk to your professor, see if they'll use an older edition, or get them offline used if all possible. That, all that right there will save you a tremendous amount of money in college. That's what I did, and I've had a lot of friends do that, and I've had a lot of friends not do that. And they're also in a significant amount of debt still. So that's just a small...
And what we did with Harrison, your younger brother, Austin, when he was 15, he passed his college entrance exams actually at 14 with his advanced math and everything. And so they accepted him into what's called a dual enrollment in this state, which is something they have in almost all states now. And what happens is the state of Florida pays his tuition all the way through for 3 solid years in college while he's in high school. So Harrison now, at the end of his junior year in high school, will have 58 collegiate hours completed on campus. And so what will happen is he'll have an AA degree completed almost at the end of his junior year, but I won't allow him to graduate, so they would stop paying at that point. I'll have him go for another entire year. So by the time he graduates with his summer classes, et cetera, he'll have about 104 hours of collegiate classes paid for by the state of Florida, and he'll be like 15 hours short of a bachelor's degree. So he can go one more semester that we'll pay for with in-state tuition, and he'll have a fully accredited bachelor's degree from a major school here in Central Florida, and he can use that to go on to graduate school, and I think he wants to go to law school. And so it's amazing what you can do if you just play the game with these people. And also, since we're talking about this, make sure you understand who your kids' college professors are. Make sure they understand that, because 90% of a class, whether you're going to enjoy it or absolutely loathe it, depends on only one thing: the professor. Because some of these professors, quite frankly, they're awful. They're really awful. Some of the professors that I had at Florida State University were hideous. They were awful. All they cared about was their own research and getting published. They didn't care about the kids. They didn't care about teaching us anything. They didn't care about anything. And I remember one time at Florida State, sent some folks down here trying to get money out of me, trying to extract money out of me for donations, and which I did not do, by the way. And I can't really talk about why I didn't do it on the thing, but some of the programming there was something. It was just a complete anathema of Christianity, so I had no interest in it. And I told them, I said, here's the problem. I said, I have really good memories in some classes. In some classes, I've got really horrible memories. I said, some of the teachers in the biology chemistry program there were absolutely horrific. I remember one guy, his name was Gib the Bus. He's probably dead now. May he rest in peace. And I took a class called Biochemical Genetics. And I loved the class. And only Ted Brower would love a class in biochemical genetics, right? And I put an extra like 30, 40 hours a week, every single week in that class, working in the laboratory, because it was a big lab class is what it was. And at the end of the semester, I understood everything. I had an oral final, Austin, before the entire staff, the staff was in there. And they asked me all these questions. I got everything. I got an A+ on the final. I got 100 on the final, on the oral final. The guy gives me a B for the class. A B. And I said to him, I said, you know, why'd you give me a B? He said, well, you didn't discover anything new or unique in the class and the research that you did. I said, well, that's just by random luck. He goes, well, that's true. He goes, but we don't do that. The only way we give you an A in that class is if you discover something. I said, but it's only by luck, by chance. He goes, oh, we know that, but we don't care. I said, but I aced the final. We don't care. And he goes, I had to bend over backwards to give you a B. And I looked at him. I said, God, you know, I said, how do you sleep at night? See, that's the problem. When you get professors like that, you know, you don't want to be involved with them, and you certainly don't want to support your alma mater after it's over with. Here's another story for you real quick. This is interesting. 10,000 migrants are to be housed in Berlin's luxury hotels while local homeless go without shelter, out of Breitbart. The Berlin Senate has announced an audacious and some would say totally inappropriate plan to house 10,000 migrants in mid-level to luxury hotels in the city with a total price tag of at least 600 million euros. I'd send that bill to George Soros, by the way. The Senate has requested a contract with Grand City Hotels to lease out 22 hotels to house migrants in the city. Remind me, never go back to Berlin. According to German newspaper Frankfurter Allgemeine, the Senate entered negotiations with London-based Hampton Holding, the owners of the popular Holiday Inn and Wyndham Hotels in Berlin. The cost breaks down to about 50 euros a night, 1,500 euros a month, and 18,000 euros a year. The cost to rent an apartment in Berlin, even in the center of the city, averaged far lower prices. A quick look on apartment rental sites shows how much cheaper prices are even in the center of Berlin. Luxury hotels. I guess we need to be saying, instead of Heil Hitler, we need to be saying Heil Merkel now. She's taken Germany over like a stinking dictator, fascist, nightmare communist that she is, and she's taken over the city, and now the city residents and these people now are having to pay hundreds of millions of euros to house the people that she brought in and invited into the thing. So, Heil Merkel! I guess that's what we need to say, Austin, right? I mean, this is insanity that Germany's following the same template, and they're allowing another fascist, communist, whatever you want to call her, dictator, to come inside of their country and do this. Unbelievable. Nauseates me. So what's your next story?
This involves Germany, too. On Tuesday, we saw the latest evidence now that officials across the globe are essentially preparing to institute a cashless society. I've brought this up numerous times, and we see it just continues to move further. The Social Democrats, which are a junior partner in the Angela Merkel coalition government, have now proposed a 5,000 euro limit on all cash transactions and the elimination of all 500 euro notes. They said basically they need to do this to fight terrorism and foreign criminals. Limits on cash transactions would discourage foreign criminals from coming here to launder money. If sums over 5,000 euros have to pass through traceable bank transactions, laundering would be severely hampered. First thing I have to say, if you're going from country to country laundering money and you're not doing more than a couple hundred thousand euros at a time, you're a pretty bad criminal. Just saying. You can't figure out how to spend 5,000 euros doing something else. I mean, give me a break. 5,000 euros? I mean, you can't even buy a nice motorcycle anymore for less than $10,000. You're telling me they're going to limit all cash transactions to $5,000, under €5,000? It's ridiculous. And this is interesting. On Wednesday now, we've gotten confirmation that the Deputy Finance Minister, Michael Meister, who told reporters that Germany is proposing the ban on cash transactions over €5,000 to combat terrorism financing and money laundering. He stated, since money laundering and terrorism financing are cross-border threats, it makes sense to adopt a block-wide solution. But if a European solution isn't possible, Germany will move ahead on its own. So not only have they completely flooded Germany with over 1 million migrants in 1 year, now they're going to make sure all the good law-abiding citizens can't even legally purchase anything for over €5,000 without essentially going to jail or being flagged by the government for money laundering or giving money to terrorists or criminals. This is just insane. It just gets more insane.
You know what's so stupid with this fascist dictatorship that's taken over Germany is that, number one, they're bringing the criminal migrants into Europe who they're having to fight now by giving cash restrictions. The government brought these people in. I mean, it blows my mind. I mean, they're saying we're going to have to implement all kinds of restrictions on you guys because we brought these guys in and we don't know how to control them because they're basically money laundering. Well, you know, here's the problem with the money laundering. The money laundering is going through the Vatican and the World Bank and the IMF. And this is what's happening with the money that's coming out of Afghanistan from the poppy, from the heroin that's being sold through Turkey back into the United States and into Europe. And the Vatican Bank is laundering all of this money, has been doing so since the 70s with Operation Gladio. This has been going on now for 40, 50 years. It was all exposed with Iran-Contra. Nobody wants to believe it, but that's what's going on. You talk to people about this stuff and about Operation Gladio and Operation Condor. They think you're insane. You read the book by I think it was Allen. He wrote the book called Operation Gladio, The Unholy Alliance Between the Vatican, the CIA, and the Mafia. And he'll go into detail. I know him. I actually attended one of his lectures and was able to speak to him extensively in Tampa last year. And the sad part about it is nobody wants to talk about this stuff, about the drug laundering and the fact that 95% of the world's opium and heroin is being produced by the CIA in Afghanistan in huge state-of-the-art factories that are producing Afghanistan heroin so pure now that kids all over the United States are overdosing on it, and that you can buy heroin for $10 for a hit. Unbelievable. That's how cheap it's become because of the massive amount of quantity. I'm going to say this again. In 2001, the Taliban cracked down on the opium production and started spraying the crops in Afghanistan. They stopped the production of heroin. Heroin had a 500% increase on the sales per hit in the United States. There was a huge shortage of heroin. It's a $1 trillion-a-year industry, third only behind oil and natural gas. It funds the black ops and the shadow government of the United States. And the craziest thing about it is, right after that, as soon as they dried up the heroin supply, 9/11 hit. Woo doggy. And all of a sudden, following year, we're back in Afghanistan and the poppy fields are growing again. Unbelievable. And the sad part about it is, Austin, 95% of the population has no idea this is going on, nor do they want to know, as long as they get their government subsidies, their government check, their Social Security, their free drugs, or whatever they're getting from the government for medical care. They don't care. They just want to leave it all alone and not rock any boats. Well, guys, heroin has become such a major problem in the United States because the trafficking of heroin has turned into this streamlined machine that's being facilitated by the CIA, just like they did with the Iran-Contra thing, with the Iran-Contra affair, the scandal back with Reagan. They have never stopped doing it. And we talked about the Economic Stability Fund and how that fund is funded by the black market money that's coming in through bank laundering, heroin, drugs, and other assorted ventures. And that's what happened to the $1 trillion of U.S. bonds that China sold. And while they never ended up on the world market, they never caused a drop in bond prices, and how the Fed doesn't even have them on their balance sheets. This is a major, major problem. Watch that five-part series online on the Economic Stability Fund, and you'll learn a lot more about what I'm talking about. What's your next story, Oz?
Well, this is pretty interesting now as we dive further and further into the police state that we see growing every single month. Now 11 different states with high schools are implementing what's called LifeLock Technologies, a company with close ties to law enforcement. They're making money from putting their breathalyzers in high schools everywhere. Now get this, LifeLock Technologies is the first breathalyzer manufacturer to introduce a precision breathalyzer that is built upon 25 years of law enforcement breath testing experience. They're adding it to all different high schools across the U.S. Specifically, there's one in Nyack, New York now, which is requiring students to submit to alcohol breathalyzers. Students who have watery eyes, are argumentative, combative, refuse to follow instructions, or inordinately jovial will be forced to take a breathalyzer. Police and school officials consider students with flushed faces to be suspicious. However, after they discussed it, they said that it would probably cause an issue because it'd be unfair, especially at sporting events. This is nuts, guys. The superintendent at one of these schools in Florida, he said these policies are not designed to punish. It's really just to make sure our kids are safe. Remember again, giving up your liberties for freedom. We want to make sure you're safe. We'll take away a student's car privileges, and he'll receive a 3-day suspension if he refuses to take a breathalyzer. If you refuse a test and we think there's reasonable suspicion, we simply just invoke the consequences. Now, students from Maine to California, all over the place, are implementing this. Let me give you guys a reality check. Alcohol has been an issue with teenagers since people started brewing alcohol. It will continue being a problem with teenagers. What you do as far as breathalyzing them at school is not going to prevent them from drinking alcohol. What there is a problem with now is the heavy, heavy controlled prescription drug use pills, the Xanax, the Vicodin, the OxyContin, the marijuana, the heroin that you just mentioned, the cocaine, the meth, all the street drugs that these kids are using. Alcohol is rarely an issue with kids coming to school drunk. There's very few incidences if you look this up. Using drugs coming to class is a whole other incident. This has nothing to do with trying to prevent alcohol-related issues at school. This is all about slowly conditioning the children in our entire United States now in high school to be subservient slaves and follow orders. We state you take a breathalyzer. I'm not even driving a car. I just walked into school. I rode with my friend. Doesn't matter. Now you're being combative. You need to take a breathalyzer now. I'm taking a breathalyzer. I don't even drink. You're suspended for 3 days. Get out of school. We're writing you up. But it's midterms this week. We don't care. You're being combative. We think you've been drinking alcohol. Now you're suspended. That's where this is going to start going, guys. That's how fast it goes there. This is where it's going. If you are anywhere in these areas, you need to look in these high schools to see if they're implementing your area, and you need to raise Cain about this. It's completely unconstitutional, completely derelict on the teachers, the principals, all their parts on providing these kids with safe learning areas and not allowing their amendment rights to be completely violated by local police departments for profit by companies like LifeLock Technologies. It's ridiculous. Any thoughts on that, Dad?
Well, yeah, it's tyranny. It's again, we're giving up freedoms for safety, and in the end, you get nothing. You don't get safety, and you end up basically being a slave. See, remember, when the bankers sold us all out back in 1934, when everybody became a debt slave to the bankers, this is what happened. I mean, when the Economic Stability Fund started, and the United States filed fiscal bankruptcy in 1933, and Roosevelt announced that the country was bankrupt. Remember, that's the same year that George Bush's father, Prescott Bush, in 1933, tried to stage a hostile coup of the United States to bring in a fascist government, a fascist dictator government like Nazi Germany had. They tried to bring that government into the United States in 1933, and it was stopped. And Smedley Butler blew the whistle on it. The entire United States collapsed in 1933 because of the debt load that was put on the government and on the people by the Fed central banks that had turned loose the M1 money supply, run the money through the roof, and then turn around and contracted the M1 money supply in 1929, causing the Great Depression. The bankers did this, and they did it on purpose to seize all the homes, the houses, the farms that had been paid for generations that people had borrowed money against to go back into the markets. This is, again, the Rothschild banking cartel, this giant octopus squid that wraps its blood-sucking tentacles around the entire planet that's run through Goldman Sachs. I mean, they run the Treasury Department. They run the Federal Reserve. I mean, the Economic Stability Fund is the Fed. And it's run by the Treasury. It's all tied together now. We've become a giant corporation that is having the life sucked out of it, and that's what this is about. It's about tyranny. It's about returning into a feudal system. It's about the United States going back to the Dark Ages. It's about having a two-class structure, the ruling elite that eats only organic foods, that doesn't eat any GMO foods, that doesn't do any vaccines, and the worker class of the serfs or the plebes or whatever you want to call them, of the people that have to run around doing what they're told to do. But there's too many of us, not enough of them, so they're doing a massive population reduction protocol using Gardasil, using vaccines, using ships off the coast of South America now to conduct abortions. We found out about that yesterday from John Rappaport. I mean, this is insanity. It's to reduce the population of the planet so they can have a more manageable group of people that can be their slaves. That's what this is going to be about. They realized back in around the 14, 15, 1600s, they had 500,000 people on the planet. It was easy to control all of that, very, very easy back then, actually, with their feudal system that's set up through the Catholic Church. And they want to return back to that. They want a one-world government, a one-world religion, all based on a feudal system in which everybody's a slave and they have the ruling elite that we have to bow down and kiss their feet. That's what they want. And this is exactly what you said it was, Austin, is to program the children to comply. It's to program the children that they don't have any rights, that they're not Americans, that they're not patriots, that they're nothing, that they're trash, they're scum. It doesn't matter, scum, if you haven't drunk anything. It doesn't matter, scum, if you're not driving a car, scum, you will blow the breathalyzer, scum, or we will take your rights away. That's what this is. This is all it is. It's, again, it's complete and total tyranny. That's how they treat us. And by God, I've had enough of it, son. That's why we started this talk show. I mean, at least I'm doing something, praise God. I mean, at least you're doing something. At least we're standing up for the rights that we have as Americans, or the rights that we used to have that God gave us that are trying everything they can to take away. It's complete and total. It's nonsense. Let's go to another story here, because I'm getting all aggravated right now. I don't want to do that. Rand Paul has quit the presidential race. Okay, well, here's what I've got to say to Rand Paul. I like him as an individual as far as when he talks, and he's just like watching paint dry. He's so boring. But the problem is with Rand Paul threw his father under the bus when his father was still in the campaign 4 years ago for the presidential nomination when Rand Paul came out and supported Mitt Romney. And I tell you what, nobody's going to support Rand long-term who knows that, because they know what he did to his own father. So unless he wants to come clean and apologize to the whole country and to his dad for having done that, he's never going to get the support that his dad had. He's not. He's just not going to have it. It's not going to happen. Here's an article from Donald Trump from the Washington Times. Ted Cruz did not win Iowa. He stole it, and the vote should be nullified. I agree with Trump. Donald Trump said Ted Cruz stole his win in the Iowa caucus after the Texas senator staff spread rumors that Ben Carson was dropping out of the race with the hopes of garnering the retired neurosurgeon votes. I agree with him 100%. Plus, what else he was doing is he was passing out little business cards with a picture of Donald Trump hanging out with Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton to people who were at the caucus, which is a violation of federal election rules, and we talked about this thing yesterday. What's your next story, Oz?
Well, it's interesting. I started doing a little bit more research on government land ownership, because we've seen a lot of controversy over the last couple of weeks with the Ammon Bundy Ranch. And, you know, every time I see, like last summer when we saw like 100,000 acres burned out west all of a sudden, and, you know, almost 100 homes burn up in some of those areas with people having to be displaced back to other states and other areas, I always wonder as far as how this stuff happens, if it's controlled, if it's intended to happen. So that's just my honest thoughts on that. But one thing I started looking at is I've started getting a little bit better understanding on Agenda 21 as far as how it ties in to government land ownership and why Ammon Bundy was so adamant about this. Granted, I'm not condoning a lot of the ways they handled the situation, but however, I do understand the reason why they were so frustrated. Couple of the primary aspects we talked about before of Agenda 21, and these are very starting to become very familiar to a lot of people, and I pulled these up online. The accelerated implementation of toll roads, and especially toll roads that discourage driving by increasing prices. We've seen that multiple times. The development of expensive and inefficient public systems in cities in order to centralize government control while also reducing the use of private transportation. We see that in almost all big cities now. Utilities monitored by smart meters, which are controlled remotely by public utility companies. We're seeing that everywhere. The purposeful lack of easy freeway access in cities so residences don't remain close to their neighborhoods. That's happened all over the place. And another one I thought about, this is really interesting because I've seen this a lot lately, is how Agenda 21 is being implemented to look at, if you look at the massive construction of mixed-use condos, which is featured retail stores essentially on the ground floor with several residential floors above it. That's all over the place. And also, too, we just saw off a road of Hardin Boulevard, happened a couple of years ago in Lakeland, there's a huge mall area, movie theater, all this stuff. They built this massive, massive apartment complex with thousands of apartments, literally the next parking lot over. So people can go to work right there in the general area, go shopping and hang out at the mall right in that area, and live right there so they won't go to travel anywhere. I pull up some numbers, and this is crazy. 81% of Nevada is government-owned. A lot of you guys have probably heard that before. 81% is government-owned. The Bureau of Land Management owns 247 million acres. The Forest Service owns 139 million acres. Fish and Wildlife owns 89 million acres. National parks combined are 79 million acres. Now, if you add all those up together, you're talking about 950,000 square miles. Yes, I said that correctly. 950,000 square miles. Folks, listen to me. The entire state of Texas, including water, is a little bit over 260,000 square miles. We're talking about almost four Texas states combined. The government completely owns and controls now and can throw people off, trespass them, arrest them without any probable cause or reason simply because they're on government land. This is getting out of control. Again, I'll repeat that. Four Texas states combined, 950,000 square miles are now controlled by the United States government. This is why they're continually trying to kick more people off their land, like we saw with Clive and Bundy 2 years ago. While they're constantly doing this, every time something happens, they're giving people incentives to buy out their land, kick them off their property. They do not want us owning property like this. They don't want individuals having 1,000, 2,000 acres. They want everybody pushing these mega cities, and we're seeing this more and more and more now. Those numbers speak for themselves. Heck, the entire United States is only 3.8 million square miles. The United States government owns a quarter of it. It's federal land. Now, and the problem is now the private land that you own still really isn't yours anyways if you want to get into the property tax aspect and argument of it, but I'm not even going to go there right now.
Well, you're absolutely right, Austin. I mean, the truth of the matter is if you even if your home's paid for, it doesn't make any difference. If you don't pay your property taxes for a couple of years, you'll find out real quick who owns your house.
Yep.
I mean, you know, they'll start putting liens on it, start seizing it, and start taking you to court and doing tax sales. I mean, it happens all the time. I mean, it's just absolutely crazy what happens. I mean, with people that lose everything. And this is what happened in the 30s, early 30s, when the banks got the money contracted and banks started going out of business. And these bigger banks started foreclosing on all this land, this farmland. You know, we talked about that before with my dad in Iowa, what happened to him with his father in Iowa. But let me change topics for a second. This is an article by Paul Craig Roberts, and it says, "There is no freedom without truth." Eisenhower was a five-star general in charge of the Normandy invasion and a popular two-term president of the United States. Today he would be called a conspiracy theorist. We're like to be issuing his warning from the White House today. Conservative Republicans like Senators Lindsey Graham and Marco Rubio would be screaming at Ike for impugning the motives of the patriot industry that protects our freedom. Neoconservatives such as William Kristol would be demanding to know why President Eisenhower was issuing warnings about our own military-industrial complex instead of warning about the threat presented to the Soviet by the Soviet military. The prostitute media would be implying that Ike was going a bit senile in his old age, a tactic the prostitutes used against President Reagan as he struggled to end stagflation and the Cold War. Now, I know that Paul Craig Roberts was, I think, the Treasury Secretary under Reagan. The truth is, he's probably given Reagan a little bit more benefit of the doubt than Reagan deserved on that. Reagan had pretty much disengaged after he was shot after his first month in office, and George Bush ran the White House for that 8 years and the additional 4 years that he was president, H. Bush. And that's what happened with that. Reagan also was hoodwinked into signing the weapons ban treaty bill, whatever it was, also for to ban automatic weapons that was included in another package.
86, I mean, yep.
In 86, he did all that. And that stopped Americans from being able to buy machine guns unless you buy ones that are pre-86 that are $20,000 for an M16 full auto, which is ridiculous when these guns cost a few hundred dollars to make. The sad part about all of this is that Reagan, I guarantee you, didn't know he was signing that, because it was only a few years after he was out of office that I actually was able to, we actually did some seminars, not with him, but he was on the same circuit as me. It was in the early 90s. And I think in 91, 92 was the last time he spoke, but I came on that circuit in 93. He's one of the only speakers that was on that circuit with me that I never got to meet, that I regret not having met. But the problem was he had to stop almost immediately after he started doing the speeches because he started having severe memory problems with Alzheimer's, Austin. And so they took advantage of him, son. And they were probably coating his jelly beans in aluminum that he was eating. You don't know what they were doing, because they straight blew out his brain. They really did by the time he was out of office. And of course, being shot didn't help anything. But Paul Craig Roberts is right about this. If anybody called out the military for what it is and what Ike called it out before when he left office, they'd be called a conspiracy theorist. But yet we know that Rubio is a globalist. We know that he's calling that straight out. We know that Rubio is probably the Republican nominee they want to have there. And it's going to be sad. And we're going to talk about this tomorrow on the show for the first 20 minutes. Oh, by the way, the show today is brought to you by HealthMasters.com, 1-800-726-1834. 1-800-726-1834, healthmasters.com. You can go to the website, sign up for our free newsletter, absolutely free, doesn't cost anything. We'll mail it to your inbox and your email every single week, 3 to 4 times, and we'll keep you updated on who's coming on the show, latest stuff with health. All of this stuff will come into your inbox for free. Also, we're working right now with getting a 24-hour line, so you can listen to the show for 24 hours a day. So if you miss the live broadcast, you can just dial it anytime you want and rehear a show or hear a show over again. We're trying to set that up so we have 5 shows on that loop. So every day the show will have the latest show on the top, and so you'll have an entire week of shows on that loop. So we're doing everything we can to facilitate you guys getting the information that you need to get and to share all this information with your friends. And by the way, thank you for supporting Health Masters. Thank you for supporting my family and Austin's family. Thank you for supporting a company that's been around for 35 years that still believes in free enterprise. So for a company that's not owned by the Chinese or the Wall Street banksters, thank you. I appreciate you doing that for us, supporting us, getting your vitamins and your supplements from us. And so often people aren't just courteous any longer, and they don't say thank you, but thank you. I appreciate you guys again. HealthMasters.com. What's the next story you have, Oz?
Well, it's good news for the anti-GMO campaigning, especially that we've been trying to do up in British Columbia. The Fruit Growers Association annual general meeting now have stated basically all the fruit growers have asked to remove and deregister the genetically modified Arctic apple until further studies can be conducted and basically conclusive that it's not toxic. This is interesting. I didn't even realize they had built this. The genetically modified Arctic apple was modified so that it does not turn brown or bruised even after it's cut. This is interesting. The compound within the apple that is responsible for the browning is removed. The only problem is that the same compound also keeps the apple to naturally fight off all kinds of pests and diseases. So it was also created using untested, extremely new biotechnology called RNA interference, or double standard RNA. Now, what's interesting about this is they said that after they created this apple, they had to spray it heavily with all kinds of different pesticides, which themselves we already know is super toxic, just to keep the apple from getting without, so it wouldn't get completely eaten up by pests. So you're already changing the entire structure, the DNA structure of the apple. Now you're having to literally soak it down on a weekly basis in pesticides to keep it from being eaten alive. And there's good riddance. It doesn't need to be up there. They don't need to be growing them. But I'm really pleased to see that the AGM and people up in Canada are also trying to take a stand now and stop these unbelievably toxic, deadly, just manipulations of mankind to not be served on our dinner plate and lunchbox every day. So I commend them for at least standing up for that. Hopefully it'll last. and it won't get re-registered under a different name or a different patent number or something stupid like that.
Always remember, Austin, if they pass TPP, if they do it, and it comes to us and it's all this glory, even if a state bans GMO foods, it'll be overridden in international court by a tribunal of corporations that are going to sit in judgment over us and the states. I mean, we're losing our sovereignty with this TPP.
Yeah.
Now, let me read this. This is an article by Kurt Nimmo. The establishment's push for Rubio, Washington Post, the neocon Standard, the National Review, and much of the rest of the corporate media are touting Rubio's 23.1% and 7 delegates right behind Trump's 24.3% with the same number of delegates. Iowa weeded out the crowded Republican field. Carson, Bush, Farina, and the rest remained in single digits. Again, they're not even talking about what happened with what Ruby Cruz did as far as siphoning off votes, and if this is even accurate. The former Arkansas Baptist Convention President Mike Huckabee threw in the towel Monday night. Ben Carson's campaign said he would travel home and get a fresh set of clothes. The Washington Post hailed the junior senator from Florida for being the Trump slayer, whatever, and declared the Iowa results put Rubio in a strong position to break away from the crowded establishment pack and claim the mantle of alternative to Cruz and Trump. In other words, the preferred favorite of the GOP establishment is Rubio. Unbelievable. See, this is why Trump was so smart, Austin, that he refused to do that debate with Fox, because I guarantee you they were going to take a bunch of cheap shots on him and try to make him look bad before that doggone primary. Because remember, that sheik owes a whole bunch of what's going on with Fox. He owes a big percentage of it. And also Murdoch, the owner of Fox, he's one of the biggest globalists pushing for no borders. I mean, this thing with Fox News is complete and total obfuscation. It is a complete and total lie. Fox News isn't the conservative news. It's basically the other portion of the controlled media that's owned by these big corporations that tell you what to think, what to eat, what to drink, what to breathe, what to believe. That's who they are. Your next story, Oz.
Well, no, you're spot on. What they're doing with Rubio now is they're already getting everybody conditioned for him to try and be the Republican nominee. That's exactly what they're doing. That's why they're writing pieces like that. They're just complete and total propaganda. They're getting everybody conditioned and prepped to accept the fact that he's going to be the Republican nominee. So they'll get it to a point where it doesn't really matter if Hillary or Rubio wins, they'll have one of their globalist do-boys in office to, again, do exactly what they want them to do. Then other news as well. This is great news for a lot of people that want to try and hold their own and keep their money alongside of all the asset forfeiture that's happening lately. This is great. Lyndon McMillan, North Carolina convenience store owner, had $107,000 seized out of his bank account by IRS in 2014. However, he basically got an attorney, and the $107,000 was reimbursed to him after they found that he had not committed any type of crime, but he had over $20,000 in legal fees and expenses just to basically defend himself. Now, a judge ruled that the government has to completely cover his cost of legal expenses. He has to pay for any other expenses and interest earned on the money that the IRS seized in the case that basically now is being said it could set a powerful precedent for victims fighting asset forfeiture. And we've talked about this many of times, is that it always comes down to some stupid loophole law called structuring, where they say that you've deposited this amount of money at this amount of times, and you're trying to do it to evade taxes. The problem is 80 to 90% of these people never did anything illegal. They didn't do anything wrong. And understand me, guys, these guys aren't getting busted for tax evasion. They're not getting busted for money laundering. They're not getting busted for purchasing or distributing narcotics. They're getting busted for structuring, putting your own money in your bank different times in different amounts. Understand me here. This is nothing illegal. This is nothing wrong. You're putting in a $2,000 deposit, a $9,000 deposit, a $5,000 deposit. This is normal behavior for an individual that owns a store that deals in cash. This is what they're trying to do, again, as I talked about earlier, with the getting rid of cash. They're trying to penalize people and scare them into no longer dealing with cash. going in and seizing somebody's $100,000 out of their bank account and charging them with structuring is nothing less than a complete and total tyrannical government run amok that's loose on the street and needs to be caged up. This is where it's headed. I'm so glad this guy had a really good attorney that got everything back for him, including all of his expenses and his interest on the money that they took and kept for almost a year. But it's getting out of control. What do you think about this, Dad? Is it getting worse, or is it just me?
Well, the problem is, Austin, the rules and the regulations on small businesses are specifically designed to put them out of business. Yep. They don't want small businesses being in business anymore. They don't want any companies being in business that aren't globally owned by the globalists. That's one of the reasons that Walmart has come in and put all these small businesses out of business in these smaller cities all over the country. Now they're closing hundreds of the stores, leaving these people having to drive 20, 30, 40, sometimes 50 miles to be able to find other items that used to be readily available in their own area, because Walmart put all these small mom and pops out of business. They don't want mom and pops. They don't want people to have their own business. They want everybody to be part of the global corporate state, a fascist dictatorship in which everybody has to pay with a debit card or with a credit card or with a mark of the beast. That's where it's going. It's going to go to a digital imprint, what's going to happen. The Bible calls it out with the mark of the beast on your hand or on your forehead, and they're going to scan you. And then there's going to be taking credits out of your account. They don't want cash at all, because they don't want people to have cash, because it allows them freedom. If you want to sell something that you have, you can get cash for it, you go buy something else with cash, it gives you freedom to do what you want to do without a bunch of scrutiny from the government. This is the fascist corporate dictator police state that we've developed, you know, in the United States. I mean, Hitler would blush with pride and envy if he had seen what has happened with the Nazis through Operation Paperclip and what they've done in the United States through the bringing in of 38,000 Nazi scientists and government leaders. I mean, unbelievable. I mean, I remember one time Bob Hope was joking about it, and I remember Sputnik went up in space first, and he was doing a stand-up comedy act. You don't remember this, son. This is way back before your time. This is back in the 60s. And yes, I really am that old. I actually saw Bob Hope do this. You can probably watch him do it online. I'm sure it's on YouTube. And Bob Hope was doing a commercial, and it was something like this. We were talking about how the Russians had gotten this space before us with Sputnik, and what he said was this. And it was so funny when he said it. He goes, well, the reason that they're in space before we are is because their German rocket scientists are smarter than our German rocket scientists. In other words, the Nazis. He actually said that. It was a stand-up comedy act. And the thing about it is, it was the truth. It was the truth. Russia had gone in and got a whole bunch of German Nazi scientists out of Germany. And the Russia and America got a bunch of them, too. The difference is they were brought to the United States under Operation Paperclip and given new identities, et cetera, except for real high-profile ones like Werner von Braun. It's kind of hard to put the head of NASA on national TV and have him talk with a German accent and not say he's German. I mean, are you kidding me? He was in the SS. I mean, so this is what we did. We brought all of these people in, along with the hundreds of billions, trillions of dollars of today's money that was stolen and looted from all these countries in Germany from the Nazis, and they came in and bought in so many of the corporations. And so now we have this corporate fascist dictatorship that's running the country, that's combined itself now with the money from the mob, the money from the drugs, the money through the Vatican, the money through the central banks, the money through the exchange stabilization fund. That's the shadow government that you've talked about so often. They're the ones that do all the behind scenes of what's going on with the money, what's going on with the economy. And so we no longer have a republic as we thought we did have when we were young, as we were taught in civics class. We're not. We're like a corporation that's being run by a bunch of dictator fascists that came through Operation Paperclip and have basically infused the United States with this horrible, horrible legacy that we have. And it's really kind of sad. It really, really is, because there's no reason to do that. And when I said a few minutes ago I was being tongue-in-cheek with Angela Merkel, but I was also being very truthful with that. She acts like Adolf Hitler in Germany. We're going to bring the immigrants in. We're going to tax you now. We're going to make you pay for the immigrants. And by the way, we're getting rid of 500 euro-dub bills because we don't want you guys running money anymore through currency exchange things, et cetera, because of all these immigrants we just brought in. Are you kidding me? When I was in Germany last year, you know, we went over there, you know, to do the research that we did, you know, with all the stuff with the borders. And it was funny. I went to the bank. I don't know if I mentioned this to you guys earlier. And I tried to cash in a couple $100 bills for euros, because we were running short on cash, and I went to three separate banks, and every single bank refused to take United States currency that was a $100 bill denomination, because there are literally hundreds of billions of dollars in Europe right now and in the Middle East right now that are counterfeit. and they won't allow them to be brought back into the United States. It's all part of the Exchange Stabilization Fund, because a lot of people say now that our government actually printed this money and sent it over there. They want it coming back in our country because they don't want to deal with the inflation blowback by it. And the banks are so scared of our dollars over there in $100 increments, they won't take them. They would take 20s, they would take 50s, but they refuse to take $100 bills. At three separate banks that I went to, they said they wouldn't take them. And that's why. What's your next story, Oz?
That's crazy, especially with the new 100s, man, because these things are so goofy looking. I can't even imagine how somebody can possibly fabricate new ones.
Well, you know, they make them, they look identical, but they don't pass the machine. When you run them through the machine, it goes beep, you know, so they know that it's a forgery, but you can't tell by looking at them. You can't tell. They feel it's the right cotton, the right print, and what they're saying is somebody got a hold of one of our presses and started running these things off over there to try to buy up these different countries through the CIA and put all this money into circulation over there to try to do what they wanted to do from an illegal standpoint. Let me. I want to do this story real quick, and we'll do your next story. Retail is collapsing in America as shoppers tighten spending. Entire malls are being closed now throughout the United States and being completely abandoned. This is from Michael Schneider. Major retailers in the United States are shutting down hundreds of stores, and shoppers are reporting alarmingly bare shelves in many retail locations that are still open all over the country. It appears that the retail apocalypse that so many made headlines in 2015 has gone to an entirely new level as we enter 2016. As economic activity slows down and internet retailers captures most of the market, brick and mortar retailers are cutting their losses by closing stores. This is especially true in areas that are on the lower portion of the income scale. In impoverished urban centers all over the country and all over the nation, it is not uncommon to find entire malls that have now been completely abandoned. It has been estimated there are about 1 billion square feet of retail space sitting empty in this country. And this crisis is only going to get worse as the retail apocalypse accelerates. We always get a wave of store closings after the holiday shopping season, but this year has been particularly active. I mean, unbelievable, son, that this is happening. We see it all over our area. We live, because we live in a rural area of the state, and so many places are shutting down.
Oh, yeah, especially like you go to the Northside Lakeland Mall now. I mean, you go in there, and there's all kinds of just, you know, store slots that are empty, or they say for lease, for rent, whatever on them. And, yeah, it's happening more and more all over the place. Everywhere you go now, we're getting reports of it from everybody we talk to. It's just that there's constantly more and more businesses shutting down. And, now, I mean, granted, I think a lot of it, some of it, at least I would say, has to do with the larger amount of online purchases, like with Amazon and these bigger online retailers and eBay and stuff now, because a lot of times you can get stuff with Prime to your house in 2 days, not pay sales tax if it's out of the state, and you get free shipping. And most of the time the prices are, you know, beating it anyways. But again, it brings us all back into that global one world order, no paper currency, because what do you pay for on the internet? Use your credit card. They send it to your house. Everything gets everybody locked in to this Agenda 21. You don't have to travel. You don't have to go anywhere. There's multiple stores here in Florida, you know, in Auburndale, that were really big. And then Walmart came in, and they just, multiple ones just shut down over the last couple of years. More and more, you see them, their business gets slow. They don't produce more inventory. And it's weird. I mean, even while I was in Lowe's the other day getting some supplies for some trailer stuff, their inventory was really low in a bunch of areas, which shocked me. But
well, also, we got our music playing. We want to thank everybody for listening again today. Stay tuned tomorrow. We'll have a guest on. We're going to be talking about Hillary, a friend of his. But first, the new Hillary. I'm not saying she's a friend. Back in the 60s. And so we're going to be talking about that. We love you guys. We really do. We appreciate you. We thank you. We'll talk to you tomorrow. God bless you. Thanks for listening. And you guys are the best.
Good night.